Welcome to the Native Advertising Powerhouse, a podcast dedicated to help publishers and native ad studio professionals build a solid framework for their native advertising efforts. The host of the show is Jesper Lawson, founder of the Native Advertising Institute.
Welcome to this week's episode of Native Advertising Powerhouse podcast. Today we have one of my favorite people on the Scandinavian native advertising scene, Anna Arvidsson from Bunyan News Brand Studio. Now, Anna was named among the 50 change makers of 2018 by DigiDay, and she also made it to our own list, the 100 most significant women in native advertising at the Native Advertising Institute. So welcome on the show, Anna.
Thank you, Jesper. Wow, what an introduction.
Something to live up to. So your official title is head of Bunyan News Brand Studio.
Right.
But you've actually been doing native advertising for quite a few years now. Could you tell us a little bit about your background and how you came into native advertising?
Yeah, you know, I started when I was 19 with commercial radio at the radio station Energy. And I was off air and on air. And I think what I learned there were how to work with PR and marketing, but because that's what it's all about, and gain effect. And then I started working at Warner Music, and I actually became manager for a band named Hofmaestro.
For a band, so a music band.
A music band, right. Okay. They were like 11 guys, so it was me and 11 guys, and I learned a lot from them. But most important, I learned how to build brands.
Okay.
And then, you know, I was headhunted to Metro, started their creative agency. And back in the days, we were talking more about advertorials than native.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think, you know, all the this native industry were exploring by publicists, but also by clients. So mm-hmm. I joined Bonnier 2013,
mm-hmm.
and had the honor to start creative sales at first Expressen, mm-hmm. but then from 2016 we are Bonnier News, which means that we are the innovation department on the commercial side for Dagens Industri, Dagens Nyheter, Expressen, HD and Sydsvenskan. So we have 5 different publications to work with.
Okay, so just for the listeners who don't know the Swedish media scene as much, because Bunyan is actually an international company, right? I think you're in 15 countries or so.
Right.
But in Sweden, those publications that you talked about, the Expressen and Dagens Nyheter, could you just put a few more words on those?
Of course. So they are like the biggest newspapers in Sweden. So we reach approximately 73% of the Swedish population, mm-hmm. during 1 week. And it's mainly digital, I will say, but still we have our print issues.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of when you say that you are, you know, the studio for all these different publications, how does that work? Because usually, depending on the, but in media publishing houses of a certain size, it's quite siloed, right? So mm-hmm. you'd have each newspaper or media or publication have their own sales force.
Right.
How does that work with the brand studio working across the different brands?
I will say that this is probably 2 key success factors in this.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is that I have my boss or my leader, he has, you know, the courage to explain to all the different people who are in charge that this Bonnier News Brand Studio is the new way of doing business.
Okay.
That's one thing. And the other thing is that I have a really close cooperation with the editorialists in chiefs in all these different publications. So I have weekly meetings with them, you know, so they understand our business, but also so we really learn their business,
mm-hmm.
because native advertising or commercial storytelling, it's all about being native to your publicists.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know the readers. You need to know how, when they want to read, how they want to consume news. What do they want in the morning? What do they want in the evening? And then we need to do the same with our native advertising.
We're going to be talking a little bit more about that because you have a very close collaboration with the news desk. You actually have a seat at one of the news desks. I want to touch on that in a minute. But first, could you explain, so do you actually create native advertising campaigns on all the different media platforms? Or do you even do some that live on all of them?
Yeah, I would say there are a handful of customers that want to talk to the readers in all these five publications. So then we do it, but of course we tweak it. So when we talk to Dagens Industri, which are a financial publicist, you know, it's all different than from Expressen.
Yeah.
And then we have different journalists writing that.
Yeah.
For the customer, but mostly our business is we're doing it with one of the publications.
Okay, but I suppose the Expressen is more of a tabloid style newspaper, and as you say, you have business publications in there, so there would be very different target audiences, I suppose. But and how are you organized in the studio that enables you to actually create something that is truly native to so different platforms?
But so we are all sitting together in the same building with DN and DE and Expressen. And then my project leaders, who also have their own budget, they are in the weekly sales meetings.
Okay.
With the different publications. And then I have five people down in south of Sweden who is working with HD and Sydsvenskan and are in those meetings, the sales meetings. So that's our first touching point, I will say, during the week, that we are in the same meetings. And then we are working very close to the key account managers, both when it comes to doing business, but also to help them understand how to do the perfect story, I will say.
Okay.
Because that's what True Native is about.
So when you sit with the sales team, is it the salespeople at Dagens Nyheter, for example, who is selling the native projects and then you execute it, or do you sell it together, or how does that? Because that's one of the things that I know a lot of publishers out there are struggling with. You know, should they have a dedicated native ad sales team, or should it be the normal salespeople who should also have that on their menu?
Yeah, I think that if you are planning to start like a brand studio creative sales, you should, because what I did, the first thing I did was to hire salespeople. And I hired them from marketing departments, PR agencies, and advertising agencies.
Okay.
Because they know how to work with the client from the beginning to the end, more than that hiring a key account manager from another publicist, because they don't use to selling IDs in the same way. So that was the first thing I was doing. And also I think it's very important when you are thinking of starting this kind of business, is that you have your own budget.
And what do you mean by that?
You have to, if you don't measure, you don't exist.
Okay.
So you need to have your own budget and drive revenue, not be in the hands of the sales force.
That's a very interesting point. I see a lot of publishers who introduce native as an offering to their advertisers, and then it just becomes, you know, an extra something, that the new black that we have, but they don't. But for the first year, 2-3 years, they don't have their own budget. I mean, a native ad budget.
And you know, because the key account managers, they have so many products, and you know, they have display, they have print, and they have their budgets are really high. So why should they bother if it's also kind of complex sometime to work with a really good story? And for me, native advertising, that's just one thing that we're doing. We're doing games, we're doing app, we're talking a lot about audio first, how to work with Alexa and Google Home. So so we're talking about the story more than about native, because that's just one way of doing things.
And so you say that one of the first thing you did was to hire salespeople.
Right.
So does that mean that an advertiser could be visited by brand studio salespeople one day, and then the next day there could be just an ad sales guy from Dagens Nyheter showing up?
Yeah, that could be, but often what we do is that we're working with cross-functional teams. So if there is a client who is interested in just, you know, working with Bonnier in some way, we go in there, and I think it's, you know, salespeople, they are very, very important. But maybe more important is the guy who has the best ideas, or someone who's working with data, or someone who's doing the analyze. So we're putting together a team to go to the client and just listening. Mm-hmm. And then we go back, and then we sometimes we have a workshop together internal to see, okay, what are we going to sell to this client? How are we going to gain effect and engagement? Mm. So it doesn't have to be the sales guy or woman who is going to the client at the first time. Mm-hmm. It could be someone else.
And how does that work in terms of internal competition? Because if you have a budget and the ad people, the ad salespeople have their own budget, you know, you might come to a client, joint forces, and you might come up with an idea, this is actually the right thing for the client to do.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, we're human beings, and salespeople oftentimes, you know, some of their salary is even based on, you know, meeting numbers. So I could foresee a situation where, you know, you wouldn't necessarily agree internally on what to propose to the client. Has that happened to you?
Yeah, what we have done is that the salespeople, if we're selling something, they also get the money.
Okay.
So that's no issue.
Okay, that makes good sense.
Right.
So you say that you started out by hiring agents, you know, maybe agency people or people from marketing departments to do the selling. Mm. Educating a sales force, if it's, you know, if it's someone new you hire from a PR agency, or if it's some of your original salespeople you want to get into the native ad sales game, how have you trained those people? Because that's not, I mean, you've been working with it for years, but I'm sure that a lot of the salespeople who are actually supposed to sell this, they haven't. So, are you doing training sessions with them to make them understand, or?
Yeah, we are in the same meetings each Monday with them. So if they have questions or if they have leads or wherever, we can help them there to say, okay, let's talk to the client in this way. But often, you know, today in Sweden, it's the clients are so used to buying native advertising. Mm. So if someone from sales are in the first meeting with a client and they say, we want to do something about with native advertising, mm-hmm. he or she say, okay, right, I will call you later and I will put you together with Brand Studio. And that second meeting could be an editor or a journalist going. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always have to be someone who is selling from Brand Studio.
Right.
It's more important to educate everyone to listen to the client mm-hmm. and send the right person.
Okay. One thing is sending the right person. They need to understand native. I think it's interesting that you started out by hiring people from outside the traditional sales organization. Mm. I think a lot of publishers would just, instinctly hire, either...
the best key account sales guy.
Yeah, exactly. Why? Could you elaborate a little bit on why you chose differently?
Yeah, but I think that if you traditional has been selling display or print, you are, this is my opinion, you're not used to how to find or create the best story or idea for the client. Mm-hmm. You know, you might, this is a good example, you know, if the client says, I'm having a sports shop here and I will sell, we have an offer that if you buy one t-shirt, you also get a football because it's the World Cup of football, for example. And they say, okay, well, maybe you should buy some display and maybe you should be contextual by the sports sites or whatever. Mm-hmm. But my guy is thinking, oh, shouldn't that ad be round if he's selling footballs?
Right.
Right. So that's a different mindset. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what a PR agency or a marketing department or people who've been working there are thinking differently. Mm. They're more thinking about how to create something who is actually giving engagement than selling something that has only a lot of reach.
You mentioned that the people that you hire that come from the agency background has a different view on, you know, what type of content should be created.
Yeah.
Is there something about the way because a studio is essentially an agency. I mean, in some ways an agency. And there are, an agency operates sometimes differently than a publisher. A publisher is selling ads traditionally, right. Whereas being an agency, in some, you know, at least sometimes, is more of a strategic partnership that goes beyond, you know, maybe the first campaign. Are you seeing yourself as that type of agency, or how are you seeing yourself?
I see myself as that type of agency, but it's really, really important that you know where you come from. You know, for us, our vision is to become number one in the world on commercial storytelling, but this is very important, help secure the future of the journalist.
Okay.
So still we need to embrace that we are from publications. We are doing our, today we're doing all our concepts are gaining reach from our publications. We're not doing anything on Facebook yet. We're not doing anything on Instagram yet in that sort of way. So we use the distribution. And that's why also key account managers are really important, because they know their product, they know the reach, they know everything about their publications. Mm. So we need them as well, of course. But I think it's important to dare to and have the courage to hire people who have a different mindset.
That makes good sense. It's interesting also that you say that you are there to make money to journalism. There is the former CEO, I think he's now chairman of the board, of JP Politikens Hus, which is the biggest publishing house in Denmark, was once quoted for saying that we make money to put out newspapers. We don't put out newspapers to make money. And I'm guessing that having a brand studio for Bunya is then to some point to make money for the journalism.
Yeah, it's really important. And you know, journalism is all about stories.
Yeah.
And that's why our work has to be all about stories.
Let's talk a little bit about the money situation. So how big a percentage of the revenue, I mean the advertising revenue of Bunya News, is native advertising?
2017 of the digital revenue is 10%.
Okay.
And we are aiming for 15 this year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot of money, Jesper.
That's a lot of money. And there was a bit of talk recently about the numbers that came out from the New York Times. It didn't say specifically what type of money the T-Brand Studio was making. Some people felt that they could see in the numbers that it wasn't going too well. But that doesn't seem to be the case with Bunya and Sweden.
No, I don't know how T-Brand Studio is working, but when I met them, I have the honor to go there, what I find out is that they don't have their own budget. This was like 1-2 years ago, so they might have their own budget now. But for me, you know, we have that, so it's really easy to measure us. So I have my KPIs, that the money we need to bring in, how much each project has to cost to gain revenue to Bonnier.
Mm.
And in that way, it's easy to see that, you know, today, when I started, we were 5. Today, we're 50 people.
So you're 50 people now at the studio.
Right.
That's a pretty impressive growth.
Yeah, in 5 years.
And where do you see that going? Is that a growth that you see continuing?
Yeah, I think so, and I hope so. I think what we see now is that we are doing, you know, last year we produced like 500 hours of video, and we see that it's increasing, of course. And if you are going to do TV, you have to have people who can work with TV. So we're doing drama TV series. We did one last year for an insurance company. We're doing one more for a band. So we are going more like, again, telling the story than just, I want to say just, but working with articles, that's one way of doing it. We are looking more of audio and video right now. And then you need people who are skilled and can work with that. So yeah, I hope so.
Hmm. When brands are buying native advertising, they're at least in the beginning, and if they're running that on publishing platforms like yourself, like legacy media,
right,
as opposed to doing it on Facebook or other, there's been this idea that native advertising is exclusively something that you could use at the very top of the funnel, so very building brand awareness, for example.
Mm.
Do you see native advertising on your platforms as being exclusively a top funnel play, or have you worked with stuff further down the funnel which are you know, maybe a little more tactical, getting people to either, you know, generating leads or even sales?
We're not generating leads in that way. I think I do agree that native should build brand in that sort of way. But what we're doing, because we have this close cooperation with the sales force, we can work together with a 360 concept. So for example, you start with a display campaign and then you do 5 episodes of TV. And when you're doing 5 episodes of TV, you are doing native articles, who is more explaining and letting the TV show be more just, you know, good content than selling something. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a strength that, for example, the linear TV channels, they don't have that. We do. We can write articles and explain for the viewers what are seeing in the TV show, and also in that way having the TV show more clean, if you could say that. Mm. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's all about volume and package.
Okay. And so what do you say to a client that comes to you and say, our objectives are, you know, we want to get brand awareness, but we want to drive some more tangible business results at the same time?
Buy banners.
Okay. So you do a combination of native and banners? Is that how?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But you know, as we all see that the display marketing are somehow declining. Mm-hmm. And if we're thinking that native advertising will save the day, you have to be really, really careful how to work with native.
Okay. Could you explain?
Yeah, because if you work with native in a way that you are actually only selling something, not telling the story, not building, not brand building, not building up some kind of engagement when the readers are reading it, that will become just another display ad position in the future.
Mm.
That's really important that you're doing it in the right way. And the most important thing is that you're telling the client what they can expect from their native advertising. So that's why I have a department with 8 people today who is only doing insight and analysis.
Okay.
And really helping the client. We're doing digital dashboards. They can follow in real time how many readers. We're on the page where they're actually stopping and reading a little bit longer, and why did they do that, and how is the completion rate on the TV shows and stuff like that. So we're selling it in different KPIs.
Okay.
Than just, you know, viewers or readers.
So it's measuring and reporting on the success or the progress of the campaign.
Yeah. And this, you know, even though native advertising is really like something that I think all the clients in Sweden knows, I think the media agency needs to really step up in this business and understand that different KPIs could drive different engagement instead of just compare it to a display campaign, as they do today.
Could you elaborate on the media buying agencies or the media agencies? You said that they need to step up in terms of KPIs. How do you collaborate with them? Where do you see them fitting in?
Today, I think we're doing a lot of business with the media agency within whole Bonnier News. So they're buying display and print and also concepts. But I think that I want to say all the time, but sometimes when we're ending up with the media agency, they see the native campaign as with the same eyes as they look at their display campaign.
Okay.
Which are, you know, CTR and how many clicks, mm-hmm. more or less. And native is more than just clicks. You know, it's about time spent, completion rate, you know.
Yeah, some of the other KPIs. And how are you doing in terms of convincing them to look at it differently and calculate? It's also about how much money they're willing to pay, I suppose.
Yeah, but if you asked me earlier if we are doing crash courses with the sales guys to help them understand how to sell native, I think it's really important to do the same with the media agency and help them to understand how to buy native or concepts, because they're not used to it. So we've been doing that for like a year now, to just, you know, going over there, having a lunch, and just, yeah, when you're buying this, think about this, so you don't ending up in that situation. But it's also very important that you are really talking about the expectations and not are afraid of losing the business.
And the media agencies that you're talking to, are they all in on native, or are they more hesitant, or Where are they at?
Most of them are all in, but what they also are doing is the media agencies are actually creating their own studios.
Okay.
So they are hiring journalists and trying to do their own natives. But for us, they're not able to buy that in Bonnier News, because we are producing natives for our clients exclusively. Mm-hmm. But what they can do is that they can buy display.
Okay.
We call it content display.
Okay, so they'll have different placements for their content than as opposed to if you were creating the content for them.
Exactly.
And why do you do it that way?
Because we have a close collaboration with the editorial departments. Mm-hmm. So once a week, I'm sitting down with them, the editorial chief, and we're talking about how to gain engagement within our readers. What do they like and what do they not like? And how can I produce better natives based on that data or insight? That's something that no media agency or no agency could know. So if I know, for example, that our readers loves the sun, we will do better natives for a company who wants to talk about the sun.
Right.
You understand? and that's why.
And those that information, those data, is that something that the media agencies are ever asking you to provide them with? I mean, if I was a media agency and I had my own creative team and I was going to create something for one of your platforms, I would say, could you please fill me in on, you know, what makes your audience tick?
Mm. Yeah, they do, but we do not share that.
Yeah. And why is that?
Because my journalist has been working for the editorial departments before we hired them.
Mm-hmm.
And they know the brands. And if you know the brand, you do better content. And that's what native is. It's all about.
And I think it probably also ties into, I mean, one of the things that you still have that is, you know, exclusive as a publisher, right? I mean, if you're giving away all the knowledge about how your audience work, then you will be reduced to just, you know, a platform where people would buy on a very low CPM, you know, space to put their content. I mean, but what you have, if you safeguard that information, that knowledge, that editorial knowledge and expertise you have, then you have something that they can't copy. You know, no matter how many journalists they hire, they're not going to be, they don't have your data.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But also, you know, if you're planning to start a brand studio, creative sales, whatever, you have to have a close cooperation with the editorial departments.
Mm.
And the editors in chief has to, you know, do a handshake with you and said, right, this is important. We need to create content that really engage the readers.
Mm.
Because, you know, for example, this is just only my opinion, but
sure,
display ads, that's more disrupting for the editor-in-chief in the way that they have to do clickbait articles than native advertising.
Mm. But you've actually gone way beyond a handshake, right? I mean, one of the things that
you don't even want to know, yes.
What? but one of the things that you've managed to do, and I haven't seen that, you know, anywhere. I've seen it variations of it, but I haven't seen it like the way you do it. Is that you actually got a permanent seat at the news desk,
right?
At Expressen.
Yeah.
Could you tell us a little bit about what does that mean? How does that play out?
So there was like, I think it was November 19 or 20th. I was sitting in Thomas Mattsson's room. Thomas Mattsson is the editor-in-chief of Expressen, and he's really forward-thinking.
Okay.
He's been in Expressen, I think, for his whole life, but he took that editor-in-chief job 2009. So we were sitting there in his room, and we have the same mission. You know, we both want to save the future of the journalism. And we were talking about how to do something new, how to work with native in a way that it wouldn't disturb the readers. It would be more in the flow with what kind of news that we are producing.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided that we will build a premium product and that we would put one of my commercial editors in the same room as the newsroom. So she's sitting there. She's attending all their meetings. They have a 9 o'clock meeting and an afternoon meeting, and she's learning a lot about the data. She's learning how what readers want to read and when, and Of course, you know, if you get an insight or a tip that we will, that Express and will write about one of our clients, she couldn't call them and tell it. But what she could do is that she could put that native campaign for a rest for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And that's not new. You know, back in the days when we were only selling print, it also happened. You know, if they were writing about a plane crash, people were taking away the print page of SAS or Norwegian or whatever.
But still, doing that, I'm pretty sure that would terrify a lot of the editorial staff. I mean, we at Native Advertising Days, the big event that we have in Berlin each year and that you attended as well. 2 years back, we had the managing director Pete Wooden from Dennis Publishing in the UK. He was given a presentation, and what they do at Dennis Publishing is that they actually get the normal editorial staff to create the native projects. And I think that's probably the presentation. We've had the Native Advertising Days for 3 years. This November is going to be the fourth. I don't think I've ever seen a presentation that we have more than 50 presentations, like, you know, every year. Mm. I don't think I've ever seen a presentation that got that much debate going. I mean, there were furious people in the room saying, like, how could you mix up those things? It's like the church and state division and everything. Sitting down at the 9 o'clock meetings at Expressen,
right.
I think a lot of editorial people would say that's an absolutely no-go.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've had pushback as well, haven't you?
Yeah, you know, up to today, it's only Expressen that we're doing this. And I have the same issue or the issues that you are talking about, I have with the other editors in chiefs, because it's a little bit progressive.
Yeah.
People would say, but
I'd say very progressive.
Right. But, you know, why Thomas is doing this, he's saying that, and I'm reading here because it's one of his quotes when we did this together. He says, the key success factor in cooperation between Express and journalist, the analyst and the brand studio is that we're located together in the very same newsroom, but with different specific responsibilities, and editorial guidelines and know-how are essential to this new business opportunity. So, for him and for me, you know, we want to create a product that actually, you know, combines data insights and the journalist know-how, so we create better native ads, and also with more real-time feeling that it actually gives something to the readers.
I think you need to elaborate a little bit on that, because the example that you gave before was more of, you know, a crisis situation. So if there's a critical article coming out, then you could, you know, pause the native project. But, you know, talking about the positive, the advantages of doing that, could you elaborate a little bit on what you get out of sitting there?
Yeah. So this new product that I'm talking about, we call it real-time native.
Real-time native.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One example is that we do with PostNord, who is a big client in Sweden. They are delivering all the mails and package. Mm-hmm. Package and mails to Sweden, one of four. Who is doing that? And what's happening were that we have this a journalist who is writing a column about how he is worried that PostNord won't deliver his Christmas gifts because they had issues of delivering Christmas gifts. And what we did is that we were calling PostNord and said, "Why, you know, here you have an opportunity to actually tell the Swedish population how it works."
Okay.
So in 4 hours, we produced a native article series about when PostNord actually were telling the issues of delivering the package. And it's not a press release for PostNord, because my journalists, they are also, you know, they are journalists. So they are also asking the tough questions.
Right.
But they have a chance to apologize to the unhappy customers, but also, you know, telling how it is.
Hmm.
That it could be different to hand out, difficult to hand out all these package in time, and five things you should think about when you are ordering online and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So it makes it the native more timely and more relevant?
Yeah, but you have to have, when you're doing this, you have to have a client that also have courage to open up and telling their story.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it doesn't work. And you also have to have a client who has the confidence in you, in your studio, that it's okay to publish the material really fast.
Hmm.
otherwise it doesn't work.
And is there other situations that, or other things that you're, other advantages that you're experiencing from sitting at the very pumping heart of a news organization in terms of NATO that is not related to something critical occurring?
No, but is this, you know, the news has real-time audience data. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one good thing and a very important thing for us when we're doing our concepts.
And how could you use that to give an example?
Yeah, we use that in the way that we know, we really know our readers. We know when and what they want to consume articles.
Okay.
And in what way? Would they want to have a video? Do they want to have a short article? How do they want to consume? And in the same way, we can do a shorter native article in the morning, and maybe we do a video during the evening.
Okay.
For the same client.
So if I understand it correctly, it's on the one hand, you are sitting there when things are happening, you know, something specific on that day that you could react to. Could be either, like you say, a critical thing, or it could be something else happening. I remember a wonderful example. It wasn't from an native project. It was a content marketing project, but it was when the Dutch queen decided to leave the throne. There was a, I think it was the biggest Dutch lawyer firm who, you know, within matters of hours came up with stories on generation shift in companies. You know, when you're inheriting a company or something like that. So they kind of jumped on, like, did newsjacking on it. And I suppose you could do exactly the same thing. So that one thing would be the newsjacking. But I'm also hearing you saying that it's a way of getting closer aligned with and getting more information about how the nature of the audience is and what they like at what specific time. Is that correct?
Yeah, but I think, you know, the whole point with native is add value. Mm-hmm. To the readers. And if you know the readers, you can add value. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're just ending up being another ad format.
Yeah.
So it's more about, you know, you're talking about being data driven. We're talking about, we are data informed, not data driven, because 50% of what we are learning is also the journalist know-how from the editorial department. Mm-hmm. When are they publishing and why? How are they thinking? Why are they writing that headline? Because if we learn all that, we can do even better natives.
If there's a, you know, publisher sitting out there now wondering, wow, you know, if only we could do that, what advice would you give them if they were to embark on that and try to get, let's assume that they could, you know, be allowed to do it. What would you give them like advice?
I would say, first of all, call me and I will have a meeting with you, and I will bring Thomas Mattsson.
Okay.
That's the first rule. The other thing is, I think it's, you know, when you look at, if you are editor-in-chief and listening to this and you're looking at your site and you see, okay, what are we actually selling here? Mm-hmm. We have a lot of banners and display ads, and what do we write in our natives? And then think again, okay, but how can I be the one who's actually doing even more interesting native ads to add value and have my readers staying longer on my site? How can I be the one who is working closely to the brand studios or what they have, mm-hmm. and actually collaborate better so the readers are staying longer?
And you also mentioned something about that there were certain restrictions. So if something comes up at the 9 o'clock meeting, you can't just call up a client saying, hey, you know, we're working on this story, you might want to do X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming you've put up a set of guidelines or rules of engagement.
Yeah, she signed an agreement.
Okay.
So what she can and can't do. So she can't interfere with news, of course, and she can't call her clients and give heads up, but she can optimize based on the news flow. And she could, as we talked about, take away some clients that would fit in the news flow that day. But the most important thing is to learn from the newsroom how they are working, so we can work exactly the same.
So if you want to do this as a publisher first, or a studio trying to, you know, get this up and running, first you'd have to figure out, so why would we do this? You know, what kind of benefits could our offering get from sitting at the newsroom? And then you want to, of course, get buy-in from whoever, editor-in-chief or whoever is in charge. then you want to set up a set of guidelines.
Yes.
You know, with rules of engagement, things that you can and cannot do. And what about telling the organization about what you're doing? I'm not supposing that, you know, just one Monday morning, a person from Brand Studio turned up at the news desk and sat down and started working. I'm assuming that you had some sort of telling there were about that.
Yeah, you know, so we were sitting there in Thomas Mattsson's room, and then we decided, yeah, we should have someone in the newsroom. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, this person needs to be, first of all, exclusively only doing content for Expressen.
Right.
In this way, because you get a lot of information from Expressen. And then we did this agreement, and then she has been in a lot of different meetings to understand even more about Expressen.
And was she introduced to the other staff? I mean, the people... I mean, I'm just saying, yeah. Like literally the people she was sitting next to. How what did you do? Did you have a meeting saying, okay, guys, listen up, this is what's going to happen?
Yeah, we did have a meeting, and she also had like a mentor from the newsroom, okay, who is, you know, helping her around, and also could be the one who takes all the questions from the other journalists if someone had something, because she's not the one who could answer everything while she's sitting there. Mm-hmm. in that way. But I think it's been going really good, and it's really appreciated from the both sides, because they are really curious of what we are doing as okay. well. And you know, because one of our missions is that the conceptual deal must maintain the same high level of quality as the editorial content.
Right.
And if we're going to do that, we need to know how they are working. We need to know their know-how.
Mm. So you mentioned that you are talking to other publications in your company other than Expressen. Mm. And I'm assuming that it's taking a little bit of time for the chief editors to get used to the idea. But are there publications or types of publications where you would, or media, where you would say that this is probably not a good idea?
No.
Okay. So it could work in any time of media.
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, it's 2018 now. Mm-hmm. We have to collaborate.
Right.
It couldn't be, you know, the ad department and the editorial department. You know, you need to work together because we have the same mission to help secure the future of the journalism.
You've been tearing down silos by having a seat at the news desk.
Mm.
You seem to have torn down some of the silos towards the salespeople, you know, the other end of the spectrum. Is that something that is important to you? And is it something that you, when you set out at the beginning, is that something that you decided, okay, so to make this work, we need to get this collaboration across the entire organization going? Or was it something that just happened along the way?
First of all, Bonnier News has different strategies that we have to do. You know, one of them is maintain print. The other one is climb the advertising chain. And in climb the advertising chain, Brand Studio is the one who is going to do that. And, you know, that makes it easier for me to work alongside with the sales force, because from Bonnier's side, Brand Studio is really an important department. And in that way, it's, of course, easier to get in and have all these meetings and educate mm-hmm. Salesforce, because we all see the same numbers. We all see what's happening with display and print, and we have to do different concepts for our clients that engage different KPIs than selling traditional.
Okay. I see a lot of publishers out there who might have the same size or organization like you, and their studios seems to, you know, and sometimes they have small two people bands on each publication. They might meet up every now and then to share a few ideas, but basically they're working one publications at a time, basically, as opposed to having that cross platform organization that you have. What do you feel about that way of working, either being a few people on each, or as opposed to being a broad cross-functional or cross-platform studio?
I think that if you limited the Brand Studio just working with one brand, if the concern have more brands,
mm-hmm.
I think that could little bit kill the creativity.
In what way?
If you have different publications with different targets and different audience, mm-hmm. it's easier, I think, to create a broader concept, and that will also gain more volume.
Mm. But did you start out at Bonnier? Did you start out, you know, having all the brands, Or did you start out like with one publication at a time and then pivot it into a cross-platform studio?
Yeah, I started with Expressen, but also 2016 we became Bonnier News Sales. So we became one department working with all different publications. So it's not only Brand Studio who is doing that.
Okay, but did they have, like, did Dagens Nyheter had a team as well that you merged with?
Or no.
Was it, okay, so it was only Expressen who had that one?
Yeah, Dagens Industri had like two people and then we merged that together.
Okay.
But the other didn't. So that was, you know, of course, a little bit easier.
Mm. But I also think then you said that you had 8 people working with Insights.
Right.
I mean, obviously you're 50 people, so that's a fairly big studio. But I'm assuming that if you didn't work with the entire Bonnier News group, then it would be harder to have those specialists on each team.
Yeah, it would. But if you will start out right now, mm-hmm. building your own brand studio, the most important thing is to hire salespeople.
Okay.
First thing. The other thing is to have your own budget.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is that you start to hire someone who's can write and then analyze.
Okay.
Or insights. Because often the publications or the sales organization have their own analysts.
Yeah.
And so you can work with them in the beginning.
Okay. But if you were to hire, you know, 5 people, if you were to start out a studio from scratch, you know, would the first 5 people hire that you would hire be a salesperson, you know?
First 2.
The first 2, okay.
Yeah.
And what about, you talked about video early on. Would that be something that you would bring on the team quickly?
That also depends on how the market is used to work with video.
Mm.
But because I think that if you say native, I think most of the people are thinking articles.
Right.
We're not, but I think they are. So maybe it's better to hire a journalist or someone who can write in the first time. And then you can start doing video and doing TV series and you know. But in the beginning for us, if the clients wants to buy a TV show, we need to bring in people just for that project.
Mm.
So we didn't have that in the beginning, of course. And then you have to have a really good art director.
Yeah, to make it look good.
You make it look good.
Let's look a little bit ahead. What's going on at Bonnier News Brand Studio right now? And what can we expect to see from you in the next couple of months?
We are talking a lot about audio first,
okay.
How to work with Alexa or Google Home, if Brand Studio have their own skill, how would that sound like, how can we make money on that? So that's what we are looking into now. Do you have an Alexa or a Google Home?
I don't have either. Oh, it's embarrassing.
I do. I love my Alexa.
Okay.
And I think that would really be something that could take over our lives. So we need to be first to be there. She will order your food. She will order your taxi. She will mm-hmm. book your restaurants. She will help you get up to speed. What news happens today and all that. So
right.
So that's one thing. Mm-hmm. The other thing that we are looking into right now is how to work more with the readers when it comes to subscriptions, how to work with native in a subscription model. So one thing.
So people subscribing for native?
Yeah.
That's going to be interesting. So you're actually going to create native advertising so good that people want to subscribe to it.
Oh, that would be awesome. I mean that the client.
Oh, okay.
So we are looking into having a subscription model for native for the clients. So you're not buying like 1 month or 2 months or 12 articles. You're buying a model when you are actually placed at the right time in the right moment.
Ah, so is that a part of the whole real-time native idea?
Right.
Okay.
So audio first and then subscriptions.
Mm-hmm.
And then always, you know, collaboration with the VR or AI and all that, just to know it's not today gain money, but you know, tomorrow.
Mm. That's very interesting. I'm going to be looking very much forward to seeing how you succeed with the subscription model, and if you succeed in convincing some of the other chief editors to let your people have a seat at the other news desks.
You will be the first to know, Jesper.
That's good. So, Anna, thank you so much for taking the time to be on this show. Very much appreciate all your great insights. I think that from what I see, the Swedish market, and specifically what you're doing at Bunnier, is really something that a lot of publishers around the globe could try to copy and at least learn from.
Thanks.
So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. And I will be speaking at the Native Advertising Day in Berlin.
You will.
Yeah.
And have you already started working on your presentation?
I would like to say yes, but then I will lie. So no, I haven't. But I can assure you that it will be awesome.
Could you at least tell the listeners a little bit about what your presentation at Native Advertising Days would be about?
We will talk about how to build the organizations for tomorrow.
Okay.
How to encourage your staff to be artists and make great concepts for our clients. We will share different methods for that. And then, of course, how we work together with Expressen and the newsroom.
So a lot of good stuff for any publisher out there looking to advance their native advertising skills. Thank you. Okay, thank you very much, Anna.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon. A lot of great insights from Anna Arvidsson, and a lot more to be had in Berlin at Native Advertising Days. And for our listeners, if you liked what you've heard, please drop us a review on iTunes or SoundCloud. And while you're there, make sure you subscribe. We are also, by the way, now available on Pocket Casts and Stitcher. But whatever platform you prefer for listening, remember that you can also be notified each time we launch a new episode by signing up for our podcast newsletter at nativeadvertisinginstitute.com/podcast. And finally, if you want to learn more, please join us in Berlin for Native Advertising Days, November 6th through 8th. Visit nativeadvertisinginstitute.com/days for more information. That's all for now, folks. Next time, we'll have David Landis, content director at Tail Content Creators, on the show. So make sure to be back for more insights on how to build your own native advertising powerhouse.
That's it, you guys. Remember to subscribe to the Native Advertising Powerhouse podcast on iTunes or SoundCloud.